This is the Arab Street Podcast, and I'm Ray Hanania. For more information on my writings, visit thedailyhookah.com or hanania.com. And for podcasts, visit thearabstreet.org. I hope you enjoy the program.
And good morning, everyone. It's Friday, January 25th, 2019. I'm Ray Hanania, and you're listening to the Arab Street Radio and Podcast, broadcast from Chicago through 690 AM WNZK Radio in Detroit, Michigan. And of course, I'm not Layla Hosseini. Layla's been covering, I'll tell you what, she's been running her radio show Monday through Friday every morning. It's got to be like, what, 14 years? I got to actually do a little profile on her and put some spotlight on her efforts, because here's someone who actually, out of her own pocket, has been doing this radio show. And, you know, in the United States, the Arab media is basically non-existent. We barely have a presence. We have maybe a couple radio stations that go on for an hour a week. Usually it's a weekly show. Layla's been able to run the show Monday through Friday every morning, from 8 o'clock in the morning, Detroit time, till 9 a.m., and it's followed by many other Arab American programs. So, and by the way, the program before us, Crystal Mayo's Motown and Cup of Joe, who doesn't like Jimi Hendrix, okay? And who knows? I played Jimi Hendrix. That song, Who Knows, was a phenomenal one back in 1969. Anyway, this is the Arab Street Radio, and we're taking your phone calls at 248-557-3300. Our guest this morning is Hanna Hassan, a researcher and writer at the Middle East Monitor. She specializes in the Levant and North America. Hanna has been covering several countries in the Middle East for news at the Middle East Monitor, with a focus on Syria and economic issues across the Middle East region. And by the way, if you want to go to read some of her stuff, you can go to MiddleEastMonitor.com and look up Hanna at H-A-N-A-A, Hassan, H-A-S-A-N, and you'll see a whole array of phenomenal stories that she writes. I love the way Memo is set up, Hanna. It's a phenomenal thing, and welcome to the radio program this morning.
Thank you. Thanks very much, Ray. It's really great to be here, and I'm so glad that you've liked my stories and generally appreciate Memo as a site. It's really good to see that it's entering the American sphere as well now.
Well, I have a bias for anybody or anything English. Your accent wins us over. It doesn't matter whether you're telling the truth or you're lying to me. I'm going to say, oh, that sounds so good. Okay. We really love it. So, but seriously, welcome to the show. It's phenomenal. Your last story that, well, let's talk about Memo just for a minute. Tell us a little bit about the background. And again, for people listening, Memo is the Middle East Monitor, and their website is MiddleEastMonitor.com. Give us a little background about Memo, if you can. You know, you're one of the researchers there.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, so Middle East Monitor was set up in London in 2009, so we're in our 10th year now.
Wow.
And it's a news agency that covers issues across the Middle East, as you said, but it does have a particular focus on the Israeli-Palestinian conflict as well, as one of obviously the key issues in the region. But it really examines the relationship that that conflict has with all of the other things that are going on in neighboring countries, which I think is something a little bit unique to the site that perhaps other news agencies don't take into account as much. It brings a lot of news from the ground. We have writers from all over the world. We also have pieces translated from Arabic. So a lot of the news that you're seeing is not just what we as people in the West think is happening, but it's what people in these countries are actually reporting on and their perspectives. And I think that that's, again, something that's often left out of the conversation. It's also an advocacy group, and we do actually hold events in London, but also we have events in Brazil and Turkey and in various other places we've had in the past year. Also, our flagship event is the Palestine Book Awards, in which writers, again, from all over the world submit books that are on the Palestinian issue and really try and celebrate and raise Palestinian literature, not just books that focus on the conflict, but also from a social and cultural perspective.
Now, I'm a big critic of the mainstream American news media because I just think they're completely biased. So, but I offer this comparison in a positive way. You're the New York Times in London of the Middle East topic. So,
That's definitely a compliment.
Yeah, although I wish I could find a genuine news media. You know, the New York Times is good. They got great writers, and I was a writer for daily newspapers for years. But when it comes to the Middle East, every mainstream American news media, they just get it wrong. And when I go to Middle East Monitor, what I like is the variety, the stories. I don't know how you do it. I mean, do you walk into a big room with 100 people at typewriters? Like, you know, when I think of the front page, you know, when I was growing up in journalism, these big newsrooms, you got like a big newsroom? Tell me about the environment a little bit at that Middle East Memo. It just sounds cool.
It is cool. It's not quite 100 people. Well, not really even close. But I think the great thing is that we are also connected virtually. So we have people in Turkey, we have people in Palestine, we even have people in Canada who work every day on making the site what it is. We also have an office in Spain. Can't forget the fact that our website is also available in Spanish. So we have people there translating pieces that we get from English into Spanish. So sometimes you'll have articles that have been written in Arabic, translated into English, and then translated into Spanish. So you're accessing people through three different mediums, essentially. And I think that that is great as well for an organization, which compared to places like the New York Times or the mainstream media is obviously much, much smaller than them. But yeah, other than that as well, we have a vibe of, I guess, just collaboration. We all work on different regions to try and ensure that obviously all stories are covered. And it's not just about the depressing stories of death and destruction around the world, because oftentimes, I think, as you're saying, one thing that media in the West often does get wrong is that they just see it as that's all the region is relevant for. But there are so many beautiful things to come out of the Middle East and that are continuing to come out. And we should celebrate those and put the spotlight on that as well.
Yeah, it's. I'm looking at the page, and if our listeners are out there, I urge them, go to MiddleEastMonitor.com. And I write there now. I've been doing opinions there now, I think, for about 18 weeks. And like I said, the traffic of the website is huge, and the diversity of opinions. Now, obviously, it's very pro-Arab and pro-Middle East. So we don't have any of these ugly haters writing there. But there is an internal diversity. Some of the people, I would think, you know, if you put them in the same room, they wouldn't get along all the time. But I think that's what makes Middle East Monitor so special. The different perspectives that you can read and hear, you know, about what's happening in any of the countries in the Middle East and the region, I think really, allows readers to be educated about what's really going on instead of being, you know, driven the way some other sites are. They have one narrow focused agenda and they want to push you to embrace that.
Yeah, definitely. I think, you know, I've been sort of working as a journalist for a few years now, and it's really sort of opened my eyes to the fact that there is really no such thing as objective reporting. And it's only when you have articles that present different perspectives and, you know, even just unconsciously the biases that we internalize, it's only when you have all of these different articles that people are going to be able to read and make an informed decision. And most of the time, what you'll have from other places is that they will present a certain perspective, but they'll almost presume that this is us being objective, this is the actual truth, and this is the facts on the ground. And it's other countries that don't have objective media. But that's really not the case when you see the variety of perspectives that there are on different issues. And as you said, we wouldn't all agree if we're in the same room, but at least we're putting out varied opinions to our readers so that they can make a decision for themselves.
Now, I'm going to speak to you as an adopted uncle, okay, Hannah? I've been in journalism now like 45 years, and I think I got in there like 1973.
Oh, wow.
And all my uncles and cousins are doctors, and I'm the only one that became a journalist. Don't become a journalist, Hannah. Go into being a doctor, be an engineer, okay? You do not want to deal with the hassles in the Western world against Arab journalists. We are really targeted in a very subtle way. These stories that you read in Memo and other places are very rarely seen in mainstream publications. And mm-hmm. have you written for other, or have you tried to write for other publications, or do you just write for Memo?
At the moment, I do just write for Memo, but I have other colleagues and people who have, I know friends who have written for other publications. And you're right, there is definitely I would say it's a conscious bias against, yeah. not necessarily because of people's origins, sometimes it is definitely that, but very much, you know, what kind of line are you pushing?
Right.
And especially in regards to, I think, Israel-Palestine issues, there is very little leeway for which you are allowed to have an acceptable opinion. And that's why we need platforms like Memo to be able to put out the other side, because mainstream media won't tolerate it often.
Yeah, and the traffic. I mean, you have what gives you power, I think, is the huge audience reading, and I think that puts you out there on the radar screen having an impact. We're on the line with Henna Hassan, I hope I'm pronouncing that right, a researcher and writer at the Middle East Monitor, specializing in the Levant and North Africa. Our phone line is 248-557-3300 if you want to buzz in. And just a reminder, of course, everybody who's listening to the live radio, if you're outside of the Detroit region, you can always tune us in online during the live broadcast of the show. And I repeat this mainly because we podcast all this. So later on when people are listening, you can go online, and if you go to thearabstreet.org, you'll be able to check the podcast, get the links, and make sure that you stay connected with our radio show. Layla Hosseini's U.S. Arab Radio Network is one of the only ones that does radio 5 days a week, Monday through Friday, 8 to 9 o'clock. And she's based in Detroit, which some might say is the heart of the Arab American community in the United States. So we want you to support the radio show. And, you know, not just this show, but all the shows that Layla pushes. Tell us a little bit about your interest, maybe a little bit about your background before we go to break. And then after the break, we can talk about the situation in Syria. Tell us a little mm-hmm. bit about yourself, Henna.
Well, I've been working as a researcher at Memo for about 2 years now, and I had some background in journalism before, but I'd studied economics during my university education, and for me, I think that's something as well that's often left out of coverage of the Middle East.
You could be the director of the World Bank.
Oh.
Not the journalist, the writer struggling for the truth against an overwhelming tsunami of anti-Arab media. But go ahead, I didn't mean to interrupt you.
No, not at all. It's you're right, you know, there is a dearth of coverage in regards to economic issues generally, and I think that especially with the Middle East, people portray it as just, you know, it's overrun by just religious wars and sectarianism, and the politics are politics. But actually, underneath it all, I think economics has a huge role to play in motivating some of the struggles and the sacrifices that we see, definitely the people making today. And as you said, I write primarily on the Levant, so Syria, Jordan, Palestine, as well as North Africa. So Egypt all the way through to Tunisia. So it's quite a big region I'm covering at the moment.
Do you take offense if someone asks, what's your ethnic background?
No, I don't, but I'm not Arab. This is, I guess a lot of people do assume that. I'm not Arab, but...
Hanna Hassan sounds as Arab as you can possibly get. I just want you to know that.
Yes, no, it is. And generally, I feel like growing up in the UK, I've always been exposed to numerous different ethnic communities. So although it's not struggles that I take on ethnically as my own, I definitely do sympathize with the fact that they're human beings as well. And, you know, my interest in them is for their betterment, not just for, you know, even if they may not be related to me nationalistically.
When I got into journalism again back in the early 70s, I was moved by what I could see was a clear bias. You know, I would hear a mm-hmm. story in the paper. I'd know the truth and I'd say, wait a minute, they're talking about my parents. My parents mm-hmm. are not terrorists. Was there a moment that, you know, in which you crossed over and said, yeah, I definitely want to be a journalist and I want to focus on the Middle East? Was there something that did that, or what drew you into the Middle East issues?
I think I grew up in a household that was very politically active. So my understanding of the Middle East was informed not solely sort of by my studies or by my career, but from when I was very young. So for me, it was sort of a natural progression rather than that watershed moment, perhaps. But I think that for many people, that is what motivates them, and the fact that we see continual incorrect coverage of people from these regions or from backgrounds or from certain religious backgrounds, and that definitely prompts people to want to share the truth.
Yeah, I was sitting in a military base. I had left college for 2 years. I was serving during the Vietnam War, and I turned on the TV, and one of the things I saw was this Arab and Israeli arguing, and the Arab was doing such a terrible job. Nobody could understand him. And the Israeli was so slick. His English was perfect. He looked perfect. His arguments, he spoke to the Americans, you know, like he was talking about baseball. And I said, you know what, I could see why we're losing. And I turned away from medicine, you know, to become a journalist, and I had a great time. I am glad that Arab journalism has attracted people like you with talents the way you do, and we're going to get into some of these stories in a minute. My guest online is Henna Hassan. She's a researcher and writer at the Middle East Monitor. The Middle East Monitor website is MiddleEastMonitor.com, and I urge you to go there. I think you're going to be surprised by the expanse, the diversity of stories, features, news, opinions, interviews. And it isn't just about politics. There's a lot of culture there. There's a lot of events. I think it's really good. And, of course, I'm really proud that I'm able to write an opinion every week over there about Middle East issues. Our number here is 248-557-3300. That you're listening to the Arab Street Radio and podcast, broadcast from Chicago through 690 AM WNZK Radio in Detroit, Michigan. Hang on, we're going to take a quick break, and we'll be right back right after these messages.
It's all in one grocery store, and that store is Zam Zam Fresh Foods Market. Zam Zam Fresh Foods Market offers fresh vegetables, halal meats, a great fresh bakery, as well as nuts and spices and much more. They also offer special deals every Wednesday, so don't forget to ask for your favorite foods, as shish kebabs are ready to go. So please stop by Zam Zam Fresh Foods Market at 24065 Orchard Lake Road in Farmington Hills. Their phone number is 248-476-0300. Again, that phone number is 248-476-0300. And they are open from 9 a.m. to 8 p.m. Zam Zam Fresh Foods Market is your one-place stop for all your grocery shopping needs and your favorite foods.
LIFE is a nonprofit charity that's provided humanitarian aid and development to people and communities for over 25 years, regardless of race, color, religion, or cultural background. When disaster occurs here or around the world, LIFE for Relief and Development rushes in to provide food, medical aid, and shelter to those in need. Please help improve these efforts. Make your tax-deductible donation to LIFE now at lifeusa.org or call 248-424-7493.
If halal is important to your family, you can trust that Miramar will offer not only the highest quality halal products, but the best tasting and healthiest foods that can be placed on your family table with confidence. Miramar is the first and oldest halal certified food brand in America, serving the Arab and Muslim community, and offers a wide range of halal food products. Check out Miramar's halal food selection today by visiting Miramar's executive distributor, Ziad Brothers Importing, at www.ziad.com.
When it comes to reproductive medicine, IVF Michigan Fertility Centers are the recognized leaders. With locations in Bloomfield Hill and five other cities in Michigan and Ohio, IVF has experts in all aspects of the field. As a founding member of IVF Michigan Fertility Centers, Dr. Nicholas Shama is one of the leading reproductive endocrinologists in Michigan and Ohio. Dr. Shama has performed over 10,000 IVF cases and has helped thousands of couples fulfill their dreams of parenthood. American board certified in both obstetrics and gynecology and reproductive endocrinology and infertility, Dr. Nicholas Shama is a very caring, compassionate, expert physician that understands not only the medical but also the emotional toil of infertility on his patients. When it's time, get personalized care from Dr. Nicholas Shama at IVF Michigan Fertility Centers in Michigan and Ohio. Call toll-free 855-952-9600. 855-952-9600.
Welcome back, everybody. I'm Rehan Ania. The Arab Street Radio and Podcast is part of the U.S. Arab Radio Network, hosted by Leila Hosseini. In an effort to energize and empower Arab Americans to stand up for their rights, for more information, go to my website at hanania.com, and you can get all the links to everything, the podcasts, the radio shows, the columns that I write. I write for the Arab News in Saudi Arabia. I write for Memo in London. And plus, I write for 12 American newspapers here in the U.S., on Midwest and American politics. And I'll tell you, when I do the podcast, I always leave the commercials in. I know a lot of podcasters take the commercials out, but because I'm Arab American, I know how much we appreciate what those advertisers do, not just for my show, but for all the shows. So I want to give them as much reach as possible, so I keep their ads in the podcast. I know some people think it's annoying, but you know what? As Arab Americans, we don't have a choice. We have to come together, support each other, and do things, you know, that help advance us and bring us up to speed with the rest of the media in this country. My guest on the line is Hanna Hassan. She's a researcher and writer at Middle East Monitor. That website is MiddleEastMonitor.com. And she just wrote an interesting piece there the 24th yesterday that was posted. The headline is, "Will the U.S. Actually Withdraw from Syria?" And you can go there and read her columns and her features, her writings at MiddleEastMonitor.com. Hanna, what will the U.S. actually withdraw from Syria? Is that, what's your opinion on that?
I think it remains to be seen, Ray, but I think that this is definitely going to be a more complex process than perhaps the idea of the U.S. withdrawing seems.
Are you saying Trump lied to us and he said we're getting out and we're not getting out? Oh, he wouldn't do that, would he?
Well, it's
in other words, we're still
to say with President Trump. I think that he himself has also underestimated the efforts and the complexity of the situation that he's actually talking about. I think that he was looking for change. We know from his record that he's a very impulsive Twitter president. He's been called the Twitter president, I believe it is.
The Twitter in chief, right.
Yeah, clearly his favorite form of social media. But I think that he doesn't understand just how much the U.S. is entrenched in the country, and how even if he wants to leave, I don't think the rest of the administration is going to allow Washington to give up all the efforts and all of the gains that it's made over the past 4 years there.
Now, before we get into Syria and some of the points that you raise in the column, don't you think, though, that a guy like President Trump, mercurial, unpredictable, might be exactly what the Arabs and Palestinians need? Somebody who could turn on a dime. I mean, I really, as much as I don't agree with everything he does, I think sometimes he doesn't know how to control his rhetoric. He says some stupid stuff. But the one thing about him is he's unpredictable. And I could see a possibility where one day he could get in a fight with Israel, whereas no other elected official would ever get in a fight with Israel. Is that a possibility to you when you look at him? Do you think this guy is so off the deep end that he could actually find himself fighting with Israel?
Not really. I don't think he'd ever go as far as fighting with Israel, purely for the sake of, aside from anything about him personally, I don't think that other forces at play within the US would allow him to take any form of real action against what is their closest ally. I do think as well his interests in Israel remaining there and being close to the Israeli administration are definitely there. We know obviously he's got more than just political and business ties with Israel. He's even got familial, to the extent that obviously Jared Kushner was a childhood friend of Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu. So I don't think that his unpredictability will ever take us to the extent where he would come up against Israel. I think there will always be forces holding him back from that. But as to whether his mercurial nature is better for the rest of the region, I think that it's worse in many ways. If arguably it could have been worse, US policy towards the Middle East has always been defined by a economic interest, I think it's fair to say, as well as political ones. However, he seems to have disregarded even the few concerns that were raised towards things like human rights in his closeness with regimes like Saudi Arabia, for example. And I think his willingness to go against the grain and go against public opinion for the sake of economic interest is something to be wary of.
Well, I would disagree just a little bit, because I think more Palestinians died while Barack Obama was president mm-hmm. than under any other administration. I always look at the end result, because no matter what an American politician says, mainly because the Arabs have no influence in this country, or our influence is minimal. We don't engage in communications to the strategic level that the Israelis do. We're always going to be at a disadvantage, I think. But anyway, it's interesting to hear that. Let's talk a little bit about Syria. What's happening there? What have you found in looking at Syria in terms of what's happening over there?
Well, obviously, I think Syria is probably one of the most complicated conflicts currently going on in the world at the moment. And it's for that reason that I think many people, they try and sort of discard the nuance from the conversation, and they try to make out that it's either just a proxy war or it's just an insurgency. And I think that's a little bit disingenuous to the actual reality on the ground, where you do have a lot of players at stake, but there are some clearly defined objectives that each party has. Obviously, you've got the Syrian government, the regime on one side, that is backed by Russia. And since Russia's intervention in 2015, they have been able to retake most of the country, after obviously the Arab uprising in 2011 there. What you do also have is obviously ISIS and Daesh elements that have been significantly reduced, but again, contrary to what President Trump says, have not been destroyed. You have as well now a significant area of the region that is controlled by Kurdish militias that the US has backed. They go under various different names, but in terms of the ones that the US has coagulated into a force, they are the Syrian Democratic Forces, the SDF. You have a section in the north then that is still controlled by opposition groups. And you also have another area in the north that is controlled specifically by Turkey, who has felt more threatened by Kurdish groups in the past couple of years that have established that zone there. And I think that a lot of the controversy surrounding the US withdrawal is very much around what will Turkey do now, because Turkey has a vested interest in keeping the Kurds at bay. Does that simplify it a little bit?
Oh, yeah, does it simplify it? very complicated. And I think for most Americans, they bring it down to one issue. Does keeping President Assad in power and not challenge him benefit Israel or hurt Israel? From the American standpoint, I really believe the Americans have probably a greater influence over the future of the Middle East than most other countries. But do you think that's an issue I think they look at? Which way do you think it falls? Is he a benefit to Israel in the sense that he keeps everything under control and doesn't really pose a threat to Israel? And he's an alternative to the change that could come there that could bring a threat to Israel. And again, I'm not saying that's a priority, but for many Americans, that's the only thing they care about.
Yeah, definitely. I think you've summed it up really well. I think that, yes, it is ultimately in Israel's interest that President Assad does remain in power. They are obviously concerned about Iranian influence, and because Iran has also backed the Syrian government in the fight, they are concerned about it becoming a proxy state of Iran, essentially, on their border. But at the same time, I think that that's also a fear of several other countries in the region, and consequently, you've got Saudi Arabia and the UAE and some of the Gulf states now trying to inaugurate President Assad back into the fold of the Arab League, for example, to try and reinforce the fact that you are Arab, stick with us, we will welcome you, and we will accept you again, as opposed to giving Iran any kind of further leverage or influence. So I think President Assad could be manipulated in that way, and he could be swerved either way. But you're right, you know, they say it's better the enemy you know than the enemy you don't. And I think for Israel, the idea of any further change coming in the region is something that they do also want to stamp out.
All right, it's the bottom of the hour. We're going to take a quick break and remind you our phone number. If you want to call in, ask a question of Hanna Hassan. She's a researcher and writer at Middle East Monitor. That website, by the way, again, I really think this is a website news source that you should put on your agenda, MiddleEastMonitor.com. Our phone number is 248-557-3300. You're listening to the Arab Street Radio and Podcast, broadcast from Chicago through 690 AM WNZK Radio in Detroit, Michigan. I'm Ray Hanania. We're going to be right back right after these messages.
The Rama Relief Foundation provides humanitarian aid into areas inside of war-torn Syria, as well as aid to the refugees who have fled to the neighboring countries in the Middle East. The foundation offers food baskets, container shipment, mental health, education, soup kitchens, and more. Go to ramarelief.org or call 248-990-4247. Any donation amount made to Rama will go to sustaining many lives. Call now 248-990-4247.
انتهى الاجتماع ومحتارين هناكل فين؟
من الآخر وبدون تفكير أورشيد فود أفضل وأحسن قرار.
عنده أكلات طيبة يا ترى؟
أورشيد فود عنده أفضل تشكيلة من المحاشي والمشاوي والمقبلات والسلطات والفطائر، وكمان بتتسوق لكل احتياجات الجروسري والملحمة وغيره بأسعار خاصة بمناسبة الأعياد، والأحلى إنه في نفس المكان.
على ضمانتك أروح وأجرب.
ولو على فود خدمة ممتازة وسعر منافس، ولو عندك خليها
علي. أورشارد فودز أند جروسري يقع على أورشارد ليك رود بين 12 ميل في مدينة فارمينغتون هيلز. رقم الهاتف 248-516-3121.
وعلى رأي المثل لقمة هنية بتكفي مية.
When you're looking for the best in optical care, Dr. Imad Nakash is your doctor to see. With years of experience and thousands of successful procedures performed, you can trust your eyes to Dr. Imad Nakash. See Dr. Imad Nakash and his professional staff for your eye care needs. There's two locations to serve you. In Hazel Park, call 248-336-3937. 248-336-3937. In Rochester Hills, call 248-299-3937. That's 248-299-3937.
If halal is important to your family, you can trust that Miramar will offer not only the highest quality halal products, but the best tasting and healthiest foods that can be placed on your family table with confidence. Miramar is the first and oldest halal certified food brand in America, serving the Arab and Muslim community, and offers a wide range of halal food products. Check out Miramar's halal food selection today by visiting Miramar's executive distributor, Ziad Brothers Importing, at www.ziad.com.
And welcome back. I think that was my cue that I missed after the Ziad. Yeah, that's right. That was me. You're listening to the Arab Street Radio and Podcast, broadcast from Chicago here at 690 AM WNZK Radio in Detroit, Michigan. Our number is 248-557-3300. We're talking with Hanna Hassan, a researcher and writer at Middle East Monitor. That news and feature website and opinion website is MiddleEastMonitor.com. Our phone line is 248-557-3300. Give us a call, and I think the question that I'd love to hear your opinion on out there in radio land is, do you think the U.S. should withdraw its forces from Syria? And two, do you think that Assad should be in power? Would it be beneficial, or would it be more beneficial to see him replaced? Give us a call at 248-557-3300. Let's go to the phone lines and welcome Jerry Haba. Good morning, Jerry.
Thank you. Good morning to you, Mr. Ray Hanania. Thank you for taking my call. And good morning to your guest, Ms. Hanna Hassan.
Yeah, good for morning. Two Arabs, we're having trouble pronouncing your name. What is that about? I don't get that.
Hanna mean happiness.
Yeah. Yes. I'm Hanania. I'm really happy.
You are very kind.
So
Hanania.
So what do you think, Jerry? Should we be in
thinking
Syria?
Guarding Syria, Mr. Ray Hanania and Ms. Hanna Hassan, I do believe the American president, Mr. Donald Trump, he underestimates the power of ISIS, the gangster ISIS, that they are still in Syria. And when he said, I'm going to pull the 2,000-plus American troops from Syria, it was a mistake. And I do believe that's why the Secretary of Defense, he has an issue. He refused that. And I believe that's what the reason he was fired. He did not retire, but he was fired as a Secretary of Defense. Now, Ms. Hana Hassan, I will hear your response to that. Don't you think President Trump changed his mind from pulling the troops? There was two reasons. Reason number one, Turkey, the minute they heard that the American troops will be leave, Turkey tried to prepare for a major attack against our ally, the Kurdish rebels in North Syria. And I do believe even President Trump, he announced later, if Turkish attack the Kurdish level, I will destroy Turkish economy. That's number one. Number two, there was two, three attacks against our troops in Manbaa, Syria, and other parts. And we lost about four of our staff in one incident, American soldiers. So maybe that make President Trump change his mind and postpone the pulling of the troops from Syria, because there is still a few pockets of ISIS and sleeping cells in Syria. I would love your answer, Ms. Hassan. Thank you very much, and thanks to Mr. Ray Hanania, the Arab Street. Thank you, and God bless you.
The Sheikh of Chicago. All right, Jerry Haba, thank you so much for calling. We appreciate it. What do you think, Hannah?
Yeah, I think that Jerry made some great points. Definitely, President Trump has underestimated the presence of ISIS in Syria, despite him declaring that they'd been defeated. It was laughable, really, to know that his forces were fighting them at that moment on the ground in the eastern pocket of Deir ez-Zor, where they are still fighting them and have been fighting them for many months. So it was extremely ironic for him to say that. But I think that his decision in this regard is not actually based on facts, on what's happening on the ground. I think that he has decided he wants out, whether that be to just save money, to show that he's keeping up with his promises to put America first, to show that he's not going to be like Obama and just drag various conflicts out, and he's made his decision on those premises more than actually what's happening on the ground. As for whether he's changed his mind since then because of, firstly, Turkey, it's interesting because although Turkey has now moved forwards with its plans to actually launch an operation against Kurds in the north, they had actually announced that plan in the beginning of December last year. So that was before Trump said that he was going to withdraw the troops. And many officials in the US administration do think that it was actually Turkey that influenced him in that decision. So as much as now I think the administration have put the brakes on the plans and said, no, Turkey is going to do an operation, we can't abandon our allies like that, I don't think President Trump personally really cares all that much about the fate of the Kurds, to be honest. And as to the attack from ISIS members on American soldiers that we've seen over the past couple of weeks, again, evidence that they have not been defeated. But and it's ironic because now actually the US, just we heard yesterday, has sent in 250 more troops in order to ensure the safety of American troops who are there while they're getting out. So although the withdrawal process is still continuing, it's slowed down and it's going to be a lot more complicated than Trump originally envisioned.
All right, 248-557-3300 is our number here at the Arab Street Radio. Let's go to the phone lines and welcome Ahmed to the Arab Street Radio. Ahmed, thank you for calling and waiting so patiently. Hey, Ahmed, good morning.
Hello.
Hey, how are you? Go ahead.
Okay, good morning. You hear me?
Yes, go ahead. We hear you.
Okay, it's not Ahmed, it's Atman. Atman.
Atman, I'm sorry, it was on my screen wrong. No problem, Atman. Thank you.
Before I have a question for your guest, appreciate, thank you, very I'm very happy for because she gave a lot of details about what's going on.
Yes. In
Syria. Before I ask her question, you talked about your website. Did you have radio, Ray?
Our radio, our website is hananiya.com or thearabstreet.org, O-R-G. And if you go there, you'll be able to get the podcast. You can listen.
I'm with you too many things. So when you broadcast, you know, you repeat your website because some people is very concerned about that. You follow the news and your talking and the yes. radio. It's very important.
Yes, thank you.
Okay. My question for Hannah Hassan is very, very important here because we hear the government here in the U.S. And Europe, what he says about now in the U.S., he left Syria. What's going on for now, the next step, this question for Hannah Hassan, what you think, what's going on for the Kurdish? Because you have two sides now, what you're calling now when the government Turkey says you have cleaned up all the area, because those people, you have taken them out from all the Middle East, and also the ISIS, because last time he says, the leader, he says, So he take care for those people. So what's going on now after when U.S. he left the Syria? What's going on for the Kurdish? I'm talking about, it's not the population Kurdish. I'm talking about fighter like PKK and Peshmerga. Okay, and thank you.
Thank you, Ahmed. Thank you for that question about the Kurds and the role of Turkey. What is the fate of the Kurds and what's happening with them, Hannah?
Well, we've had confirmed news this morning that the Kurds are actually in talks with the Syrian government, and I do think that they will come to some kind of agreement there. The Kurds had approached them about a week ago as well, and negotiations had not gone too far. Same with negotiations with Russia. But I think ultimately the Kurds will have to seek help from the next biggest backer that is available to them, which is the Syrian government. The Syrian government as well, its armed forces are actually quite weak. And without Russian support, they wouldn't have necessarily got to the stage where they are now. So I don't think the prospect of having an armed encounter or confrontations with the Kurds really appeals to them. Much better to get them on side. And I think there will be some negotiations as to what, if the war does end, and depending on political circumstances, what exactly the fate of that region that is controlled by the SDF, what will happen to it. But for the moment, it looks as though they are set to work together, at least for the moment. As to now how that will affect Turkey, it remains to be seen. It's a very volatile situation on the ground, and things can change very, very quickly, as Trump's decision has illustrated most clearly. But I think that Turkey will definitely have some kind of limited operation against the Kurds, as they've done last year twice. So we definitely haven't seen the end on that front.
And weren't the Kurds at one time fighting, though, with the against the Syrian army? I mean, when all that civil war was going on, is it surprising to see, is it because Assad is so weak at this point, as you point out, mm-hmm. if he didn't have the Russians, you know, helping him, he'd probably have nothing, but he managed to survive, and do you think he can be trusted? Can the Kurds trust him to work out an arrangement?
I think, realistically, the Kurds cannot, but they are in a very desperate situation at the moment, so they've got no one else, and the regime is the next best thing, as opposed to obviously looking at Turkey or even looking at the opposition, who they have also been fighting. Although you're right, they did fight the Syrian government early on in the war. It was only when the US sort of started its fight against ISIS specifically that they started getting the arms and they coagulated into this group as the SDF. As Atman rightly said, they are sort of what PKK, which is the Kurdistan Workers' Party, they are PKK-affiliated groups and militias first and foremost. So I think that although they will be tough to have to reconcile with the regime, it's their only option at the moment.
All right, we appreciate the calls from Jerry and Atman. Our number is 248-557-3300 if you want to call in. We're again at the 15-minute mark, so we're going to take another quick break. And when we're done, we'll come back for our last segment of the Arab Street Radio and podcast here at WNZK AM 690 Radio live in Detroit. And, of course, we will have all this podcast on our website at hananiya.com. I'm Ray Hanania. We're going to take a break, and we'll be right back right after these messages.
you have immigration questions dealing with wanting to visit the United States, wanting to work in the United States, wanting to study in the United States, or bringing your family to the United States, you need to contact Lagana & Associates Law Firm. Lagana & Associates Law Firm practice areas include family and business immigration and deportation. Dealing with cases overseas in the Arab region, for free consultation, please call their WhatsApp number at 001-617-283-1018. Lagana & Associates Law Firm offers experienced guidance that will help you with your legal needs as well as navigating the legal system successfully with confidence. Again, their number is 1-617-283-1018.
تعرفوا شيء؟ احنا كتير بنهتم بالمقبلات بالاكل الشامي،
واحنا بنهتم بالبهارات والتسبيكة في الاكل المصري،
واحنا نهتم هواية باللحوم وجودتها بالاكل العراقي، واحنا في مطعم عشتار نهتم بكم، اعتمدوا علينا. ايا كان، نحن في عشتار نعرف ان لكل مذاق اسرار، فنحن نقدم اجود انواع اللحوم من ملحمة عشتار الواقعة على 56865 راين رود.
عشتار، قصة حضارة ترويها لكم اطباقنا المميزة في كل زيارة.
تفضلوا بزيارتنا في 3625 East 50 Mile Road Stanley Gardens.
مطعم عشتار بإدارة فادي بهنام وعلي البغدادي. 586-698-2585.
Are you going to start a restaurant or a grocery store soon? Do you need floor plans and designs? Call Najee Abood at 734-744-9796. Do you want to buy kitchen and restaurant equipment at discount prices? Call Najee Abood now, 734-744-9796. New concept products and design, the trademark of kitchen equipment. 5% discount on all purchases of $75,000 or more. New concept products and design, new location, 31185 Schoolcraft in Livonia. Learn more at www.newconceptproducts.com. Call Najee Abood, 734-744-9796.
Kashat's Mediterranean Market and Shish Kebab offers a great array of your favorite Mediterranean meals. Meals range from specialties, shawarma sandwiches, seafood dinners, and they offer special big trays of your favorite food, plus much more. Kashat's Mediterranean Market and Shish Kebab address is 32839 Northwestern Highway in Farmington Hills. Their phone number is 248-538-9552. That number again is 248-538-9552, and the supermarket is open from 8 a.m. to 9 p.m. Kashat's Mediterranean Market and Shish Kebab will definitely leave you satisfied.
And welcome back to the Arab Street Radio. I'm Ray Hanania here at WNZK AM 690. Our website is 248-557-3300. And our website for all our podcasts and prior radio shows and individual interviews, the audio podcast interviews that we do, is at hanania.com. And we, of course, we appreciate everybody listening to the show. If you want to call in and ask a question, we still have a little bit of time, 248-557-3300. Hassan is my guest. She's a researcher and writer at Middle East Monitor, which is, I'm jokingly calling it the New York Times of the Middle East. I don't really like the New York Times, although I subscribe to it. Because I think when it comes to the Middle East, but this is the Middle East Monitor is the New York Times that the New York Times could be if they were fair and objective on Middle East issues. And when you go there, the amount of news that they have, the number of writers is so impressive. Hanna, you have to say hello to Daoud Abdullah for me and Shatta Khalil because what they do is phenomenal. I just saw that. You have another story that was posted about a British band that is boycotting Eurovision, which is to be held in Israel. What is that news story about?
Well, funnily enough, Ray, I did actually just write that earlier this morning. So luckily I'm in a position to tell you what it's about.
That's good.
So a British newsman just announced on Twitter last night that they would not be entering the Eurovision Song Contest because that is set to be held in Israel this May. So obviously making a declaration like that, kind of as we were saying earlier on, is just really not acceptable for the majority of people in the West who consider, especially, you know, it's unfortunate, but there is a perception that any kind of bad opinion expressed about Israel or any kind of criticism is actually some form of anti-Semitism,
right,
which is ridiculous.
Right, it is ridiculous.
It's not at all. You know,
it's interesting. They people here criticize President Trump's administration to the extreme. Nobody mm-hmm. says anything. They criticized Obama. We can criticize George Bush. But for some reason, we can criticize every political government, but we're not allowed to criticize the government of Israel. And this story kind of fits into this dangerous trend that's taking place in the United States. And it's still in the midst of a battle. But this campaign against BDS, boycott, mm-hmm. Divestment, and sanction, this is the story that you just wrote about, touches on that. Is there a BDS that's acceptable, and is there a BDS that's not acceptable? Or, in other words, some people think that, well, maybe BDS goes too far, and then others say, you know, BDS doesn't go far enough. How do you, kind of view the boycott movement in terms of what it's trying to do, and mm-hmm. what's the goal?
I think that, you know, you're right. There is a spectrum of opinions about the BDS movement, but I would say that the vast majority do look on any form of boycott with some kind of suspicion, which as we've just said, is unwarranted. We have to remember that this is a movement that was inspired by the boycott of South Africa during apartheid. And it's ironic because a lot of the criticisms surrounding the Palestinian issue always associate Palestinians or Arabs or Muslims with violence. And the BDS movement is admittedly non-violent. It's about using non-violent means and using our freedom of choice in terms of what we buy and what we endorse to express our dissatisfaction with the oppression and the occupation of Palestinian lands. And it's quite frustrating to see that regardless of what kind of civil society, regardless of the movements that civil society can get together and drum up, there's always some kind of criticism about it, as you said. Whereas really, this is a criticism of not Jews, not a Jewish state, but a criticism of policies employed by the State of Israel that are directly affecting millions of people's lives. And it really is an issue that Israel has poured millions of shekels and dollars into creating this perception around it. But when you take a step back, it suddenly seems that really it shouldn't be that controversial.
Yeah, I definitely think BDS is legitimate, especially for me, anything that has to do with the occupation, the illegal Israeli settlements. And then I look at the other side of it when I cross the green line with BDS. It has to be very discriminatory and targeted, because there are a lot of groups that Israeli groups that support, well, at least I think they support the Palestinian cause, like Americans for Peace Now, the mm-hmm. New Israel Fund, J Street. There are a whole array of these progressive Israeli groups, and do we risk isolating them, weakening them, you know, by being too tough with the BDS movement? In other words, if someone goes into Israel, mm-hmm. is it necessarily justified to boycott them as opposed to someone going into Israel to support the occupation and the settlements? Or is it impossible to separate the occupation and Israel?
I think that's a very contentious question, you're right, for a lot of people. And I think it does depend on, I think, the individual and what choice they choose to make, how far they choose to go. And even just with the issue in question, as you're saying, you know, there are some organizations in which supporting them can be of benefit to interfaith relations, or just, as you said, you know, they're not contributing to the occupation, so they don't deserve to suffer. But others could equally say, you know, there it can't be separated. And until we put pressure on Israel as a country as a whole, it's not going to stop its occupation and its discrimination against Palestinians. I think people can take various sides in that, but as to, you know, having produce that has been illegally stolen from lands in the West Bank and Gaza and occupied East Jerusalem, definitely there's a case there that, you know, no, we can't benefit from something that is directly contributing to the oppression of so many people.
Yeah, I agree. I mean, it's a difficult issue because on the one hand, you know, the goal is to have peace. You know, we don't want violence. We want a resolution that's fair, you know, to mm-hmm. the Palestinians. Some support compromise, some don't. That some want to turn the clock back all the way to 1948. Some are just giving up, it seems. It's very depressing to see this. And yet, I don't think we can give up. You know, Hannah, I really appreciate you taking the time. I told you this was going to go by very quickly. Because at 1 hour, you know, one day we're going to have an Arab media in the United States where we have 24-hour radio, where we have a daily, you know, newspaper, and although some people think newspapers are no longer relevant, I still think they have a place in our mm-hmm. society, where we even have TV programs and cable programs to engage our views, our side of the story fairly, because right now it's not presented that way. I think you guys do a great job at Memo at MiddleEastMonitor.com, and I hope that everybody out there listening to this radio show takes a minute and goes to the website at MiddleEastMonitor.com, enjoys them, and learns some things. In the final minutes, is there anything else that you wanted to mention that we didn't bring up or that we didn't talk about? And I know we don't have a lot of time, but, you know, any topic that you felt was really important that you want, or something you wanted to say?
No, Ray, I think that you've addressed everything really well, and thank you so much for your ongoing support. I'd only perhaps add that people can should definitely come to the site to read your articles. I found them very enlightening, and yeah, thank you very much for having me today.
Oh, yeah, no, it was a real pleasure, and hopefully we can bring you back, and one day when I get to London, I want to go to that New York Times Middle East Monitor offices.
And just, we look forward to that.
And be in awe at the size, because when I look at your website, believe me, there's an army of writers, and it really impresses me and makes me feel good to see that happening. So really happy for what you do, and again, give my regards to everybody over there. Hannah, thank you for taking the time to join us this morning on the Arab Street Radio.
Thank you very much.
Well, you're welcome. Everybody, that was Hannah Hassan, and she's a researcher and writer at Middle East Monitor. And again, I can't urge you enough to go to MiddleEastMonitor.com. It's one of many great websites where you can get news. You need to support it because that's your view. I mean, as an Arab American, that's where you're going to find, you know, support for what you believe and for our culture. And it's not just about politics. It's about who we are as people. Anyway, I want to thank everybody at WNZK for hosting the show. I want to thank Mike, our producer. And remember, you can go to get, you can go online to get information about our radio show. You can get the podcast by visiting hanania.com and also the arabstreet.org. You'll get all the information on all my writing at hanania.com and the podcast. Everybody, thank you so much for joining us. I hope you have a great week. I'll be back in a few weeks, but you'll have to go to my website to find when the next radio show. I only do it once in a while. Layla has pulled me out of radio retirement to host these shows, and I'm happy to do it. It's a lot of fun. I get to stay in contact with a lot of people, including people like Hannah. Anyway, everybody, have a great week. We will talk to you again. Mike, thanks so much for producing the show. Bye-bye, everybody. Thank you for listening to my podcast, which reflects my writings. I write a syndicated column about Middle East issues at the Arab News, Middle East Monitor, and the ArabDailyNews.com. And I also write on mainstream American political issues for the Southwest News newspaper group in Chicagoland. Check out my column archive at thedailyhookah.com or hanania.com. And, of course, these podcasts at thearabstreet.org. Thank you for listening.